most of the writers I know sometimes fantasize about if they had their work life to do over again, that they go the B. Traven route. And B. Traven wrote Treasure of the Sierra Madre and several other books. And nobody actually knows who B. Traven was. And nobody knew at the time who B. Traven was, except for his, presumably his, agent. So they had to send the royalty checks. And it's true that I have met a lot of wonderful people through my work, and I've made many, many wonderful friends, and that's good. But it's also true that there was something for which I was completely unprepared when I became a minor public figure. And that's, I was completely unprepared for the number of crazy people and for the stalkers and for the number of people who hate me. And on one level, it's very hard to not take it personally when people send you death threats. And on another level, something that really helped me to put this into perspective was learning that professional baseball players receive death threats, and that professional basketball players have to have bodyguards who will walk them from the locker to the court because there are people who would kneecap them. And it's something that I don't understand. And I've talked about this with a fair number of people who are fairly well known and have found that this is pretty ubiquitous, that every famous person receives death threats. And I'm not even, I mean, for myself, of course, I'm not putting myself on the same category of fame as, you know, Elvis Presley or, you know, any honest to goodness famous person whose lives I can't even imagine in terms of the intrusiveness of people. There's maybe a decade ago, I became friends with Andy Hurley, who's a drummer for Fall Out Boy, or acquaintances with him. We have a nice relationship, and we only communicate every year or two, but it's always very friendly. And we've talked a few times, and I asked him about this, and he said that when their band was in a car wreck, they received notes from people saying, "Too bad you didn't die in the car wreck." And I know this culture is killing the planet, and I know this culture is crazy, but I don't understand why a rock band would elicit that level of hatred. I don't understand any of it. I mean, I've never liked Rod Stewart's music at all, but I never sent him a death threat. I wasn't even tempted to send him a death threat, even after "Do You Think I'm Sexy?" And also I about 14 or 15 years ago, I became friends with Joan Baez, and I asked her about this too. And I also asked her, you can't really get a better career in music than Joan Baez has had. And I asked her if she gets people constantly telling her everything she's doing wrong. And she started laughing and said, "Yes, every single night after every single show, somebody will come up and say, you know, you really should be here a cappella. And then somebody else will say, you know, you really need to have two drummers." And again, I've learned that Major League Baseball players receive notes from Little League coaches telling them how to improve their stance. I don't know. I guess I guess I just don't understand any of it. Obviously those who've read my work know that I'm not a big fan of Richard Dawkins, and I have certainly critiqued him, and I have done exegeses of his writing, but it would never occur to me to write to tell him that I wish he was dead, or to threaten to kill him, or even to threaten to silence him, to try to get him deplatformed, as people have been getting Richard Dawkins deplatformed lately. And this is something, and I guess there's one more thing, as long as we're talking about people sending hate mail to people they don't know, there's also, back when I used to read reviews of my work, I stopped reading reviews 12 or 13 years ago. I saw a review once that said something that I really liked, which was the review said that at some point in his career, pretty much everyone is going to hate Derek Jensen because he doesn't follow ideologies, but he follows wherever the analysis leads him. And so there will be people who love one of his books and then find themselves feeling betrayed by another book because he was ours and now he's not ours because he has thoughts that are different than ours. And I think that that's part of it, is that somehow we get all confused. Because when someone is in public, somehow we think that then we own them, and somehow we think that then they owe us. And I have heard of actresses, actors too, but actresses especially, with given the hatred of women in this culture, who will take one role and a member of the viewing audience will think they fall in love with her. And then they will get really mad when she takes another role that is a different sort of human being. So if she plays a nun and they fall in love with her, then when she plays someone else who is not chaste, then they get really mad at her for having betrayed them. And I see the same thing ideologically, that somehow, when people enter the public, we now own parts of them. I think part of the problem is that we don't have functioning communities where people have discourse, and they have discourse within their communities face to face. And it makes me think of, I think there is some confusion because at one time, if you're in a small community and there is, and you have a baseball team that is based in your community, like at a junior high or a high school, you actually know the people and you have relationships with them and you interact with them, and it can become appropriate, certainly not to hate them, but it can become appropriate to invest in them. You know, as my mother went to all of my football games when I was in eighth grade football, she was invested in our games simply because of me, or she was invested in me and through them, the game would be more accurate. But in that sense, the sort of being a public figure becomes a toxic mimic because there actually is no relationship there. And it's not like a friend with whom I'm actually having a conversation. And when I talk about this investment, I want to be clear that I have been guilty of this too. For many years, I was far too bitter about the fact that Climax Blues Band used to be a fabulous blues band. And then they put out that dreadful song in the early 80s called I Love You, which was just pop. And me and my friends were all like, oh my God, they are such sellouts. We can't stand them anymore. What terrible things did they do? And so I want to be clear that when I'm complaining about this, that I am not getting on a high horse, that I have had my favorite bands in whom I have been unduly disappointed when they went a different direction and no longer did your basic slide guitar blues, but instead went to pop, for which I have 35 years later not forgiven them. When I wrote A Language Older Than Words, and then the next book was The Culture of Make-Believe. And in The Culture of Make-Believe, I did an analysis of pornography. And in order to write about the pornography, I had to look at the pornography, which I had not. I've never been one who has really looked at pornography, so I haven't. If I'm going to write about it, I need to know what I'm writing about. And I got a note from someone who said, I am so disappointed that you looked at pornography. Once again, it's like for a few weeks to actually write about it. But she said, I'm so disappointed that you looked at pornography. And I wrote back to this person. I said, you had one vision of me based upon a symbolic representation, which was A Language Older Than Words. A Language Older Than Words isn't me. You didn't actually know me from reading that book. You knew what I presented. And now you actually still don't know me after Culture of Make-Believe. You know another symbolic representation, as though I had painted a painting. Or as though I had been acting on stage. This is a symbolic representation that is not actually me. And you don't know for a fact that any of it even occurred. So you had one feeling about me based on one symbolic representation, and now you're feeling betrayed because of another symbolic representation when in neither case do you actually know me. And I think this is true for everyone in this position. I think for me, this is what brings all of this together, is because we invest in whether J.D. Martinez hits a home run. We invest in whether he does really well for Boston. And the thing is, we actually don't have a relationship with him. And this is a problem that doesn't just inhere in the society, but it also inheres in in mass culture, which makes it so there, I'm looking at all the books on the shelves, and, you know, Neil Everdon's The Natural Alien affected my life profoundly. But I don't know him. You know, I interviewed him once, and he seemed like a really nice guy. But I think it's understanding. When I was a teenager, one of my friends, his little sister went to see Sean Cassidy. And when she got from the concert and when she got home from the concert, and she was, you know, it was a huge concert and she's somewhere in the back, and she was, I don't know, 10 or 9 or however old it is when you go see Sean Cassidy, and she went with the parent, of course, and she came home and she made the mistake of saying during one of the songs, he pointed directly to me. And so he was singing that song to me. And of course, because we were all 15 or 16 and, you know, there was her older brother and his friends, we teased her mercilessly about that for the next, you know, until we all went to college. And I think that that's pointing to something here, which is, you know, if I write something, I'm not writing it to you specifically. I'm just writing it. And it's the same when Joan Baez is singing something, she's just doing her art. And having a relationship with the actual artist is a completely different thing than having a relationship with the art they've created.